Calling Thor Bjarnason.
Bjarnason.
Hey, Gunnar, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Are you not coming tonight?
I am. I just forgot the times.
Where are you?
Shoot. I'm on my way right now, okay?
When you say on your way, you mean
you're like,
way.
Haven't gotten your car yet?
No, I haven't even gotten my car yet.
Wait, yeah. Was that your car door slamming?
Wow, that was the...
No, that was the bedroom door.
Uh-huh. Oh! I think that, yeah, we're not getting a full story here, but we'll wait.
I think that someone's supposed to make nuggets on the next meeting, right? Is that still in place? I think it is.
I'll be there in 20 minutes, guys.
Okay.
Right. Sorry.
Next show is going to be a special one where we're going to go through answers to the cult things that we did.
Okay.
And we're going to do some fun stuff.
I do have to say that, you guys, today I was late coming here. I forgot what time it was. And I got a call. And
they heard it.
Really? In between all the yelling and horrible stuff you were telling me, I felt the love, okay? I was like, oh, I am needed and wanted. And so I got in the car with a big smile on my face. You guys made my day. I appreciate it so much.
Guess what we need next time, Thor? Some nuggets.
Yeah, what is penance?
Some nuggets.
I guess chicken nuggets is the traditional penance, so I'll have to bring some.
And whether they're Chick-fil-A nugs or not, you have to bring Chick-fil-A sauce.
But we'll be disappointed if they're not the nugs from Chick-fil-A.
I'll see what I can do.
Let's go over a couple other things. We're going to do a couple bishops.
Okay.
Now, bishops, we're going to go over these again. We actually went over them on the recording that didn't get aired because we had some technical difficulties. We're going to redo them.
Okay.
A couple of people from my church came to see me the other day. While I was at home, since it was Saturday, they caught me working in my garage, organizing my camping and woodworking equipment. It was a good visit, but a couple of days later, I got a call from my pastor's secretary.
This is the second time you're reading this.
Asking.
I swear I've heard this before, Gunnar.
I haven't. Well, maybe our answer should be better this time then.
Okay.
Asking if I can meet with the pastor this Sunday. I'm afraid he's going to ask me to work with the youth or be a leader in the scout program. Is there something I can do to prevent him from asking me? I don't want to say no to him. It's better if he can just put two and two together and decide I'm not a good fit before he even asks me. Any suggestions? The first problem is that we're really late with this question or this answer.
So this person has already been called. And is probably already working with the youth in his ward or it is his church.
But what you could have done is...
Nathan has said in the past, and I said this last time too, that if you skip every third Sunday going to church, then you never get a call. And so he swears it works like a charm. So that's, of course, it's too late for that.
I think maybe if you just told your pastor that you really feel called to work with women between the ages of 19 and 35, that would probably, you'd probably have a different calling.
That was much better than the first suggestion that you gave, which was, Pastor, I really like young children.
I love young children. I love them.
That should get you out of it, but it also will cause you real big problems.
You might be called in more regularly. So I was going to say, we'll start by not asking the nice colts for help because they're way too late in giving you advice.
Oh, I thought he was going to give us some insult about how bad we are.
Another thing you can do is find the odd doctrines that your church has. I mean, every church has some weird ones. And next time the pastor, you know, comes up to you, start talking about those really enthusiastically. Okay? So, and he will be like, oh, and he's not going to
Let you be unless, of course, around the youth.
Unless, of course, he's a radical.
You know, you just say, I really want to teach these kids about that Adam didn't have a belly button. And they'll be like, oh, tell me more. You probably won't get called.
That God is a snake charmer.
You know, I know it's you guys are like saying these as jokes, but some people actually will go headlong into this. Hold on. But,
well, if you are resurrected and you have a perfect body, you won't have a scar, and your belly button is a scar.
Really?
And so,
I don't think it is.
I consider it an accent mark.
Oh, yeah. It's a beauty mark.
It's something to have fun
I'm with. Always like, hey, Callie, lift up your shirt. Let me see your belly button.
How many times have I blown raspberries on belly buttons to my little kids?
Not a lot.
You know, we never wanted to know how many.
Oh, I'll tell you. A lot.
Right here.
I'll tell you what. The hairier the belly, the less appetizing it is to do raspberries.
Definitely.
But the better the sound.
Because there's some. It's like strings on a guitar.
Yeah. I tell you, there's
it's
not
a symphony
one belly button here that I'd want to do a raspberry on. Not one.
Really?
Yeah, they're all. Oh, look at that hair.
You actually have fuzz.
Yeah. No, it's too hairy.
Of course,
yeah.
I have fuzz in my belly button.
No.
It's almost like you don't have a belly button.
I'm going to say Nathan's is the most appealing.
Well, I actually had mine altered. I did have it surgically altered. I had a hernia, umbilical hernia, and so they had to go through and they put like a patch. They did like a patch kit.
So it was kind of like plastic surgery.
Basic plastic surgery on my belly button.
But your belly button looks like a face that someone took the nose off of. It's like gone.
I think it looks happier.
Guys, we totally
younger.
We need to go back to the question at hand. You need to do is you need to get a nice cold blanket and you need to give it to your pastor and just say, I think you need this more than I do. I think
that
will do
it. If he's going camping with the youth, the pastor could order multiple.
Oh, that's
nice cold blankets so that all those young warriors can be kept warm.
You could always say, I'm part of a nice cult. I'm part of a cult.
Yes.
Yeah, and give them your nice cult certificate.
Yes. That should
there
be the trick.
There we go. That's the one.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope you guys can help me. I'm getting a vaccination, a vasectomy. In April.
There's a big difference between those two.
Don't
get it mixed up.
What the funny thing is that a couple weeks ago when Gunnar read this, he made the same mistake.
Did I?
Yes.
That's because I'm just looking at the words like you do.
Yeah.
And then like saying something and I'm like, wait, that doesn't sound right. Let me re-say that. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Plus, English isn't your first language.
I'm getting a vasectomy in April. When I took the time off, I had to ask a couple of coworkers if they could cover my shift. When I was explaining that I needed the time off, both of them guessed that I was going to be getting the snip. I wanted to keep it a secret, but it looks like the cat may be out of the bag when it comes to my gonad procedure. Maybe I can regain some of my dignity if I could give them an excuse as to why I need the time off. Any suggestions? Testicularly yours, Trent. All three of you here, Brian, Thor, and Nathan.
Are we disclosing here?
Oh, are we?
No.
I can remove it. I won't, no. But I can remove it if you don't want it to be said.
I've already had enough things removed.
Snip, snip.
Gunnar doesn't remove anything, Brian. Okay, just letting you know.
I remove quite a bit.
He's gonna gloss over his, you know, his stumbling over the gonad line.
No, that's gonna be in there. Now I have to keep it in. Damn it! When you say it's not gonna be in there, guess what? It's in there.
It is. Let's see.
You just tell. You just own up to it, and you say. When they're like, oh, you're getting a vasectomy, you're like, tell your wife because she'll be really relieved. Can you say that? No? Okay.
No.
It's not. It's as a surprise for my wife.
Oh, for her.
Surprise!
It's a birthday present.
For your wife?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Nathan, you're bad. That's when you want to be mean to someone. He just doesn't want anyone to know. It's a birthday present for everyone's wives.
I think it's too late for that. And I mean, does he want us to make up a convincing lie? A colonoscopy. There you go. Say, I've had some rectal bleeding.
Same
lately
region,
and...
but
rectal
a little
bleeding.
Further south. Okay.
you can just say, I couldn't go through with it. don't know. Just tell him. Just own up to it. Get yourself an ice cold blanket and hide underneath it.
There's nothing wrong with getting a vasectomy.
My kids were kind of, because they wanted to know what I was going through or what I was doing. And I'm like, and they thought even afterward, like, so you had him cut off?
Oh.
They thought that it was like having the whole situation.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the whole thing?
They thought that. Like having everything cut off.
Frank and two beans?
Not the Frank. But they thought the two beans.
Okay. More like walnuts.
The twig and veg. Yeah. But mostly the veg. Oh my
gosh. I don't consider it to be a bad thing. I mean, it's just a... You know, especially if he already has a couple kids or something like that.
If you're going to do it to the dog, you're just as bad.
Yeah, except that with the dog, you actually do take out the veg. It's Nathan said.
I saw this. It was like, maybe it was when I was getting a vasectomy, but I was looking at a message board talking about it, and someone was talking about their dog having the... And they said, one of the things they did was... have a silicone implant put in to help their dog with his self-esteem.
Oh,
so his dog! There's a dog out there with two fake balls to help his self-esteem. Like then he can really the dog park really hold his head up high. You know? Yeah, he's totally intact.
That's weird.
You can own it just as you can own. Wearing a nice cult t-shirt into work.
Yeah, no explanation needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just come back and be like, I joined the nice cult. That's what you can say. That's what took the week. That was the week about.
Yeah.
But you make sure that you do join the nice cult.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you don't join the nice cult, we don't support you. Is that bad? Am I saying
yeah.
Oh, that was bad?
We can cut that one out.
Okay. No, it was good.
I'll cut it out.
Don't say that.
Okay, you're right.
You're right. Cut it out.
So anyway, do we have anything else?
We have a Magisterium Collecti that you're going to present.
Oh, I am. Awesome. Okay, so George Washington. I have a lot of admiration for the man.
Is this George Washington Carver?
No, although that might work too, actually.
Didn't he invent peanut butter?
He was really cool, right? So, yeah, no, but I'll go with George Washington as in the first president first, okay?
Oh, okay.
Then we'll get George Washington Carver next, I guess, so.
You know, that's interesting because, I mean, this is a little spoiler, but I mentioned George Washington in the presentation today.
Oh.
In the cult. Mm-hmm. Or...
Well, let's not give it away, okay?
Okay, that's interesting. So, George Washington, why? He was a man who had a lot of power. He was in charge of the Continental Army, and he always deferred to the Congress when he was in charge of the army. And let me tell you, the Congress did not have their act together most of the time. They really screwed the pooch a lot of times, and he was very patient with them.
So not a lot has changed.
Yes, exactly. But he was very patient with them, and he moved with their authority all the time. So life happens, and they want to get together to try and form some sort of new government. He was the one in charge of all the delegates there. He sat there as president, didn't really put a lot of... emphasis into the new constitution, or he didn't push it, but he kept the peace, he kept everyone together. He was also the first president of the United States. Two terms, he was a firm proponent of there not being any parties, of just being people that you elected, just like, I know so-and-so is a good guy, I'll elect him, you know. No parties, which I really, really like. I do. I think the United States would be run a lot better without parties. I do. He did two terms and then he quit. Now, at any one of these moments, he could have actually taken over the country mm-hmm. quite easily. If he had a little bit more of a I'm the one who should be in charge. Everything would be better. Yeah, complex. A little bit more, he would have taken over the country and a lot of people would have supported him because he was a very popular guy. He did not do it at any time. Did he try and take over the country? And he also set up the two terms. And so basically every president after him only tried to serve two terms, except for Franklin D. Roosevelt. Everyone else just did two terms. That's all they went, because no one wanted to be or try to show up President Washington, because, you know, he set such an incredibly good example for for the country. And yes, I mean, you can always point for flaws in the man. Yes, he did have slaves. He was very custom. That's just what the way it was at the
time. If you're a landowner.
If you were a landowner and a wealthy one, and he did. He married rich. He married a very wealthy woman.
Mm-hmm. She liked his teeth.
Yeah, definitely. but anyway, so yes, but he did free his slaves upon his death, so which is kind of cool. And that was not the common practice at the time. Mm. There's a lot to admire about the man. And without him, the country would not be what it is today. It would be a lot worse off.
And we wouldn't have a $1 bill.
We would not. So.
That's true.
So that's my presentation, guys. I really do like him to be a member of the Magisterium Collecti. I do.
I concur. And I can't add anything to it because I think you just hit all the strong points.
And he didn't chop down that cherry tree.
Well, no, he did.
He did?
But he didn't lie about it. No, wait, that's Abraham Lincoln.
No, it never happened.
That's a folktale, guys.
That is apocryphal.
Yes.
No, it's true.
No.
Didn't he? But he grew up in a log cabin.
Oh, it was Rinaldo. It was Rinaldo that did the cherry tree.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what it was.
And Rinaldo has the wooden teeth.
Which he gave to George Washington.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there it is, guys. Unless someone else has an objection.
No, I think that's a good
someone
one.
Someone does. Okay, awesome. There it is. So, George Washington.
George Washington is in now in the Magisterium Collecti.
He's probably in charge of it.
Yeah. Does he have any descendants that we can send that to?
No, he doesn't.
Really?
No. No.
He didn't have any children?
Nope, didn't have any kids.
What about George Washington Carver?
Did he also have a vasectomy?
I'm sure he had kids.
Maybe he did have a vasectomy.
Yeah, he had the first vasectomy.
It's when they did it with the axe.
Yeah.
I'm getting these stories mixed up.
That's the cherry tree that was chopped down. Was that his cherry tree?
I think we're going to have to cut this whole episode, guys.
Don't say that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it. Are we ready to start on a cult?
Well, I did have one thing.
Hold on a second. Let's introduce someone.
Oh, I've been talking this whole time.
Yeah.
But this
we have our knight from the Nice Cult who apparently emailed in, but for some reason I can't get into the Nice Cult email because someone changed the password.
And I forgot.
Well, I can announce it publicly here that in a previous episode I was called to repentance. And I just wanted to publicly say that I accept the chastisement. And am penitent, and am willing to embark on a crusade.
That's good. I think before you go, you need to be in Mormon conformity with the rest of us, and shave your hair.
And get a vasectomy. Oh, you already.
You already got that.
You already got that.
I've got one down.
But Brian's going to be introducing us to a cult today, and this...
Well, you know, let's not throw that egg in the basket yet.
He's going to be introduced into a possible cult today. Now, for all of you listeners out there, hear it out before you get enraged on us calling this a cult. Please hear us out. And remember, not all cults are bad, okay? Sometimes it's good to be culty with things. So...
Welcome to another episode of Mom, I Joined a Cult, the only podcast about cults by an actual cult. Listen as we examine other cults, discuss what they did right and what they did wrong, and then build our own cult from the ground up. And now your hosts,
Gunner,
Nathan,
and Thor.
Before jumping into it, I just wanted to kind of talk about the characteristics of a cult.
Okay.
You've all heard of the BITE model. I think you guys talked about that before. So BITE is, you know, is by this man named Stephen Hassan. And each letter stands for a different form of control. So B is for behavior control. I is information control. T is thought control. E is emotion control. So behavior is about, you know, rules, rewards, punishments. discouraging individualism, encouraging groupthink. I, the information, that's censorship and propaganda, restricting access to outside perspectives, distorting information to make it more acceptable, compartmentalizing information into outsider and insider doctrines, and the practice of reporting deviant thought, feelings, and actions. Okay, T, the thought, suppressing critical thinking and promoting conformity and requiring members to internalize the group's doctrine and adopt the group's quote-unquote map of reality as reality, right? It's characterized by stark black and white thinking, us versus them mentality, practices such as changing a person's name or identity, use of loaded language and cliches, which reduce complex ideas into just buzzwords, and forbidding critical questions about the doctrine and labeling opposing beliefs or opponents as illegitimate or evil. And then the E, emotion, is manipulating information, fostering loyalty through love bombing, and guilt and or fear-based indoctrination. Okay? So those that's the BITE model. And then there's a few more that was from a different website that I thought would be worth kind of talking about. So one of those is the group displays an excessively zealous and unquestioning commitment to its leader, and whether alive or dead, regards his belief system, ideology, and practices as the capital T truth.
I think I've done every single thing on that list. I think I have broken all of those.
It's like Gunner's to-do list.
Yeah.
Questioning doubt and dissent. Questioning, doubt and dissent are discouraged or punished. The group is elitist, claiming a special exalted status for itself and its members. The group has a polarized us versus them mentality, there that is again, which may cause conflict with the wider society. The group teaches that its supposedly exalted ends justify whatever means it deems necessary.
Mm-hmm.
This may result in members participating in behaviors they would have considered reprehensible or unethical before joining the group. And finally, the group induces feelings of shame and or guilt in order to influence and control members. Often this is done through peer pressure and subtle forms of persuasion. So we'll revisit all those, but I wanted to kind of lay that out and kind of, you know, have those things percolating in your mind. The ideology I want to talk about today is woke.
Woke!
So the woke movement or culture
so
or
you're gonna have to explain
ideology.
What the woke movement is.
Okay. Okay. So the definition from dictionary.com
okay.
is having or marked by an active awareness of systemic injustices and prejudices, especially those involving the treatment of ethnic, racial, or sexual minorities. So the idea is that you're aware of and you've woken up to these injustices and oppressions that are rampant in society.
Okay.
Most notably in our Western society. Okay? And so one of the first criticisms or counterarguments that says, well, this can't be a cult because it lacks what?
A leader.
A leader. Okay? And to be fair, like in all of those things that I read, there was only one of the points that mentioned a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But I would actually argue that there is a leader who is dead, okay? And it's a thought leader, okay? Who is kind of the source of a lot of the ideas of that are kind of underlining or underpinning the woke ideology. Does anybody have any ideas of who that might be?
Mm-hmm. George Washington...
Carver. No.
Harvey Milk? Maybe?
Abraham Lincoln.
It's that dang...
It's Garrison Ford!
Oh, that's true.
No,
it's... Garrison Ford is not dead.
No, it's Karl Marx.
Oh. You think so?
I was going to say one of those people.
I was going to say one of the Marx brothers.
No, I just didn't get it. Carl.
I thought it was like something related to
okay,
the
so,
Russians.
Okay, so who here has read like the Communist He's Manifesto or any of the other works of Karl Marx?
I, believe it or not, I haven't, and I'm kicking myself right now. I should. I should be reading something.
So
like
I
that.
Have read it, okay? Not to toot my own horn, but no, okay, so...
Toot, toot.
Toot, toot, there it is.
We're going to shoot it for you.
The Communist Manifesto, the basic premise of it is that there is the oppressed underclass, the mm-hmm. proletariat is what he calls it. So the working class that is being oppressed by the bourgeoisie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Thor would have never been able to pronounce that word if he read it.
No.
No.
But I have heard it.
That is the upper class, or the landowners, you know, the owners of property and the means of production, that, and the whole notion of is that the working class needs to rise up and to overthrow the oppressor and to take the means of production and control it, right?
Okay.
And so it's very anti-capitalist, okay? It's like, it's called the Communist Manifesto. And it was the basis of, you know, all the communist movements of the 20th centuries and to today. And so the Marxist doctrine in a nutshell is really just that. It is that there is an oppressive class, a class that holds the dominant class with power, and there is a victim class, an oppressed class that must rise up against the oppressor. And like I said, in the original document, it was an economic thing. And why I say that that's the father of the woke ideology today, and you could argue there's a lot of other fathers and mothers of different disciplines, you know, but the idea is that you could just replace the economic class with any other oppressed class. And voila, you have a critical theory that's based on that foundation of Marxism. So you could have, you know, any disadvantaged class of race or gender or disability, you know, any identifying marker of intersectionality, and we can talk more about that, that makes a critical theory, and that's what woke is.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
But it's not that there's oppressor and perpetrator, oppressed and oppressed, oppressed and oppressor, victim and perpetrator. And those that are committed to this, to the woke ideology, you know, they may not consciously revere Marx as their leader, but they definitely revere that belief system and hold it to be an unquestioned truth of reality. Okay. And so, you know, to go back to that quote, it was, the group displays an excessively zealous and unquestioning commitment to its leader and the belief system, ideology, and practices as the truth. Any thoughts on that?
What does voila mean?
It's French.
Why are you bringing French into
kiss my no?
And then you threw in some German in there.
Some German.
I did.
Yeah, Karl Marx.
Yeah, I thought he was Russian.
He is German, yes. So there's certainly, and you'll often hear the, you know, the term of the, you know, social justice. That's the, you know, that's one of the biggest buzzword phrases of the woke ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's one of those things that you really can't speak against. You can't be anti-social justice, because then what?
Yeah.
You want social injustice? What are you talking about? You know?
I'm really, and so it's one of those things
you can't speak against, right? You're unwilling to oppression, right? But there's no denying that injustices exist in our world. Like, there's no question about it, right? I think it's equally undeniable that actually things have never been better for almost every, if not every, marginalized class in today's society than ever before in history.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I agree.
If you are engaged in this fight, in other words, if you are part of the movement, then you are virtuous and worthy of praise. And if you are not, or even worse, if you speak out against it, you are reprehensible and evil.
Hmm.
And that's the mentality.
There are classes of people who do kind of get the shaft, and you want to protect them. And you want to, and we want to be more mindful of their feelings, because they haven't had that. And so, I mean, part of wokeness, I mean, there's a spectrum, right, of caring about someone, how they want to be addressed or how they want to be treated, and trying to treat them as humanely or humanly as possible. But there's also there's a spectrum there.
Sure.
There's also the abusive on the victim, quote unquote victim's part, where they're just like this person saying, no, you don't like me because I'm black or gay or whatever. And so there's a spectrum of what they should expect and what we should afford them.
So there is an indoctrination that is, in my argument, is that it's definitely occurring. An indoctrination that is primarily, it's coming from everywhere in society now, but it started in the universities. That in almost all colleges today, this is the default philosophy of the vast majority of college professors, is they teach everything from this more woke perspective. But it's also being forced into companies where they have diversity training. You guys have heard of this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've heard of DEI?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's become like this big thing that is everywhere. And in colleges, you are required to have a diversity statement. Okay, so DEI stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And all of those are like really great things, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are great things.
But there's a kind of a, you know, it's more than just, you know, there's more than just those words, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like the buzzwords that I was mentioning earlier,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So where it goes off the rails is where it becomes, I mean, maybe you cover this, but like where it becomes thought police.
Yeah.
Where they, you're wrong because you have an opinion about something.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that's when it's...
And there's a lot of, you know, ideas like white guilt or white fragility or white as oppressor. And that's just in the racial area. So I remember this was many years ago, probably like 7 years ago, like 2017 or something. I remember I was serving an event at the University of Utah, and there was this conference they were presenting, and they were talking about the need for having a diversity officer in every company and making diversity one of the most important goals for every company. And I remember thinking at the time, there's something a little off about that. You know, not that we shouldn't have diversity. I mean, diversity is one of the, you know, hallmarks of our country. But if a company is choosing diversity over
profit
and ability, you know, like if I'm the owner of a company, I'm not, you know, I'm going to want to actually have the people that are best at whatever job they're doing, whatever their, you know, racial, ethnic, gender status is.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it was like, okay, no, this trumps that. This is more important than that.
Mm.
We've seen this in the news lately about with affirmative action and the scandals with Harvard and all these other places where they are not admitting, you know, like Asian American students who have higher test scores, they're putting in, you know, African American students with lower test scores just so they can meet that diversity quota. And what happens, not always, but what happens often is that because the curriculum and the education is so rigorous, those students are actually more likely to fail and drop out because they can't meet the rigorous standards of the college. Or what could also happen is that the colleges will say, well, let's no longer have such rigorous standards. You're only allowed to fail one or two students in the entire class, regardless of what their work is. So that's kind of, those are some of the...
So that dilutes the school itself because exactly. Their education, their certificate is or diploma isn't worth as much because anyone could get it because
exactly.
Only 2% fail
yeah.
or whatever.
And I, in doing this research, I also found there's a statistic that was cited. And so I don't know the exact, you know, I don't go to the primary source, but it said that like 75% of colleges in the University of California college system for STEM programs. You know what I mean mm-hmm. by STEM? So the math and science. Yeah.
The core stuff.
That 75% of the applicants were denied based solely on their diversity statement. Because now almost every college requires applicants to write a diversity statement as part of their admission process. And this was before they, you know, before they even looked at their other credentials. If their diversity statement did not match up, they were out of the running.
I mean, you can see how it could be helpful to have. I mean, I don't agree. I don't agree with having a, like having it to be diverse. It should be a merit based on merit. At least if you are smart enough or you're in the top whatever percentage. But it also having a diverse student body does help a little bit with education because you'll understand. I can. I'm trying to see the
multiple
other
points of view. Sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like you have someone who grew up in the poor part of the neighborhood or in a bad circumstance.
Sure.
Or and that wouldn't necessarily be represented in the student body, but you have that. Yeah. So I can see how having diversity helps, but it also making it a factor is harmful to those people.
Well, it's, you could say the same thing about my son. He's not going to listen to this episode. Okay? he is not going to make it to college, I don't think. Possibly.
People do grow up, Gunnar.
Okay? No, they don't.
But no, and also, you don't need to be successful. You don't need to go to college.
No, you absolutely. You absolutely don't. But for these colleges, like he could, okay, I'll say this. He wouldn't be able to make it to Harvard. Okay. He doesn't have a drive to succeed in anything. Now, if it was a college for being a ninja, he would probably be able to go to that.
That's what he's trying to go to that college.
He's trying to get his doctorate.
He's trying to get a doctorate in it. And, you know, that's something right now he wouldn't be able to get into it. I say that because it would almost be what he comes from is something from a lower class. He comes from a lower class setting that really mentally messed him up for probably his whole life. And it's something
like his
that
developmental
he's
years.
Going to, from one to eight or nine or something, he had no support. And we've been playing catch up ever since then. And he's probably going to be playing catch up for the rest of his life. He is getting better. Like he is moving past a lot of that, but he is going to be looked at as a white person that has more, that has a privileged white male, you know, with the woke mentality. Mm-hmm. His grades cannot make up for what he's gone through.
I wanted to show you an image. And I'm just going to pass around and then I'll kind of...
That's why I'm saying it's unfair.
And I'll explain it. But everyone just take a look at that.
If we're going for
see one. This one right here.
Okay.
It's the picture of you not wearing a shirt.
Okay. And tell
that's
me,
hilarious.
And tell me what that this one right here, what it reminds you of.
Okay. Interesting.
That feels a little bit like segregation.
Doesn't it? Okay. Yes. So this image, you can find it on Google Images, DEI session, people who are white. So DEI session, it's got a sign that says DEI session, people of color. And then on a totally different part, or like another door, it says DEI session, people who are white.
What is a DEI session?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. So remember that training I was talking about that is being required at companies and everything. Okay.
So here they have it totally separated.
They're segregating it.
Yes, they're segregating the diversity.
Okay. So what does that remind you of from our past history?
Yeah, right? segregation.
Jim Crow, right? Yeah. These are the colored bathrooms, you know? And this is the kind of thing that it's happening really all over.
Is it because they're giving them different information?
Yes, because, and this is happening in schools as well. There was this school in New York, and this is for a quote from the New York Post article. It says, elementary school teachers who are dividing kids in their classes based on race and actually, quote, teaching white students as young as six that they're born racist and should feel guilty benefiting from white privilege. Okay, so those are some of those ideas, white privilege and born racist. So here it has goals. This on the left is the children who are black, basically. Okay, and what they're encouraged to do or allowed to do says voice their feelings, feel embraced, explore risks, share experiences about being a kid of color, have an opportunity to be in a majority setting, understand assimilation. And then for white children, raise awareness of the prevalence of whiteness and privilege. Challenge notions of color blindness. And we can talk about that. So challenge assumptions of, quote, normal, good, and American. So challenge those assumptions. Understand and own European ancestry and see the tie to privilege. Understand assimilation. Learn models of white anti-racist advocates. So these are things that are, you know, so they're separating the kids and they have different expectations for each one.
Do you think that they, I mean, have different perspectives a lot of times? And so, I mean, I can see why that, I can, I mean, I would want to have them not segregated, but I can see why if you're only have a short amount of time and you want to teach these kids that if you have, if you grew up black, you may have, you'll have different experiences.
Sure.
And so your approach to DEI may be different because you're part of a class that hasn't been, that's been segregated against or acted against.
In the past.
But absolutely. No, even now, I would think.
Go ahead, Gunn.
Yeah, and I think it depends on where you're from and who you are and how. I think your parents actually do a lot of that. I don't think our parents are racist, are they? Or?
No.
I didn't, because I don't feel any animosity towards anyone of any
They didn't
color.
Like that I had, yeah. that I brought but, in cola to your house.
Yes, and yes. They're racist against that.
It's a caramel-colored liquid that wasn't
But
water.
Wouldn't you get more out of it if you heard it from them and talked with them about it and you had an open discussion and what it was? Because it's not an open discussion if I have someone teaching me that I'm wrong and I'm not hearing people say, well, this is what I'm seeing, and I can't say, oh, well, this is the way that I viewed it. Maybe I can view it differently. Maybe we can work together on it. That's not happening.
To hear the perspective of the group. Now, one of the key points I wanted to highlight in that is it's challenged the idea of color blindness. So this is challenging the idea that Martin Luther King put forth. In other words, that you judge people by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. This is saying challenge that. That you should judge people by the color of their skin. It really is. It's saying you should judge that if you're white, you are inherently racist.
I don't. Is it saying?
I'm telling you.
Okay. Well, could it be that there's other perspectives on that? Like, it could be. So, what is they're saying? Challenge color blindness because some people think that they're colorblind. Like, you may not think that you have prejudices. And I like to think that I don't have a lot. But then I think, you know, if I was walking down a alley and there was, I mean, there are certain things that you would say, well, if it was a big person that I might go to the, if it looked like a big man coming towards me, I might go to the other side of the street because I don't see who they are. And if it was a smaller person, I may not care as much, but is that sizist? You know, is that because I don't like, I'm anti big person? Or if I judge someone I think we all have these hidden sure. little things like, okay, if there's two women and going for the same job or two people going for the same job and you say, okay, this girl is 23 years old, she's newly married. And then there's another person who's just as qualified. Is there one I would pick over the other because I think maybe she could get pregnant in the next couple of years.
Sure.
I mean, there's like these little things or a black person and I don't know if there's a situation where I would use that as a factor. I don't think so. But are there little things that you're like subtly racist about? Like, I don't think this person has the same background to understand this job as easily. I wonder if there's little things that so when they say challenge colorblindness, I'm like, you think you're colorblind, but is there something where you're not really colorblind or something where you're not totally fair? And so I was wondering if they're saying that, like challenge your color blindness, notion of it.
It's possible. But I do know that there are accounts of, you know, where they're in classrooms, like these are elementary school classrooms, where they say, okay, take a step forward if you belong to this marginalized identifier. Mm-hmm. Take steps back if you are part of the dominant, the oppressor class. So, and if you're, so, and the more and more you fill, so if you are white, you're going back. If you are male, you're going back. If you are heterosexual, you're going back. And so obviously kids aren't going to know that, but these are the identifying markers that almost make a new class system according to the woke ideology. And it is seeping down into really all areas of society, including education of young people. And, you know, one of the things it says, you know, is to let's say the phrasing, learn models of white anti-racist advocates. And I don't know if you've heard that term before, anti-racist, but it's the idea that if you're, you know, you need to be anti-racist, not just not racist. You need to be anti-racist.
You don't agree with that?
Again, I think that there are undercurrents, like just the word itself. It's one of those platitudes. It's one of those ideas like social justice. Anti-racist, well, of course, who isn't anti-racist? But when you understand some of the underpinnings of it and some of the other indoctrination that's happening, and I'll give you one example. So one of the proponents, one of the most popular proponents of anti-racism is a man named Ibram X. Kendi. One quote that he put forth is that the only remedy to past discrimination is current discrimination. The only remedy to present discrimination is future discrimination. In other words, the only way to battle the inequities of the past is to make there be inequities in the present. To make there is discrimination against
discrimination
white people. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And the only way to, with present discrimination that's still happening, the only remedy is to have future discrimination, that you are discriminating against white people. And that's the doctrine. There are three circles. This is another idea of cults, is that there's three circles. There's an outer circle, which is kind of like the, you know, adepts or initiates, you know, to the cult. There's kind of a secondary circle, which are the adepts, those that are, you know, more steeped in the doctrine, and then there's the inner circle, which are the leaders. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about the woke as a cult, that outer circle is huge. It's what almost everybody is, and they don't even believe they could be in a cult. But they are, like, socially, emotionally, psychologically, morally dedicated to the ideas, committed to its tenets. And if you think about, like, social media, you know, people that hung up, you know, Black Lives Matter posters or flags, or they post a little black square, or they use their pronouns, you know, in their email tags, you know, or they spout talking points about inclusivity and equity in a lot of things they say. And the goal of all that is twofold. It's number one is to make other people want to join this movement. And the second one is to virtue signal that they are, in fact, devotees to the cause. Another thing that, in my mind, is really cult-like, and that is this idea of re-education training. So I don't know if you've heard about this. So what happens if an individual somehow fails to live up to the ideals of the ideology? They must undergo re-education training. And there's many examples, but one example in recent years is there was a law professor, a liberal law professor at the University of Chicago, who gave an exam to his students. It was like a hypothetical law case that was like real racism. So there was, and so the question actually had a couple of racial slurs, which you can imagine what they might be, but they're redacted, or they only had the first letter, you know, so asking the students, well, how do they deal with this? Well, apparently some sensitive student was offended, brought this to, you know, the higher ups, complained about it. And this professor was banned from the campus, put on like administrative leave, and required to undergo 8 weeks of sensitivity training. Another area where both information and behavior control can be seen is in the cult practice of reporting deviant thought, feelings, and actions. So I'm sure you've all heard about cancel culture. Mm-hmm. So that's what this is. It's kind of like, it's akin to excommunication. And it's, you know, if you somehow violate the ideals of the woke ideology or dispute its claims in any way, you can be canceled, boycotted, stripped of your standing in society, possibly even lose your employment. So individuals are vilified and canceled for speaking out against any aspect of the ideology or for supporting anything that might speak out against it. And again, this is like viewing any opposing idea as reprehensible and evil. But my daughter, she's in graduate school right now, and she was assigned a text that was very much along these lines. It's called, "So You Want to Talk About Race?" And, you know, she said, Dad, I think you should read this. You know, like, I got a lot out of this. And I read it, and I've never had such a reaction to a book, because it stated so many things like, this is the truth. And it stated things like, if you are white, you are racist. If you are male, you are sexist. If you are able-bodied, you're ableist. You know, like just by default, you are. And if you argue against it, if you say, "No, wait a second, I don't think I buy that," in their mind, that only proves the thesis, because you got defensive about it, because you tried to argue against it, and so it only proves the point. So there's a no-win situation. Either you admit that you are racist because you're white, or you, if you question that the very, you know, foundation of that accusation, then you're racist.
Hmm. Wouldn't you then, that statement be true of the opposite? Whatever other race you are, you're racist of white people?
But it only applies to white people.
Yeah. There is a theory that blacks can't be racist.
Yeah, I always thought that was weird. I've heard that same thing.
I've talked to racist blacks before.
Yeah, but is it the thing that, like, there's one position where it's like the culture who is in power, they're the ones, they're the only ones that can be racist.
Again, power and oppressor, oppressed.
But there's also, just like someone's being racist towards me, and a person's not necessarily in power. Because I've been in that situation where I've been the only white person, in South America for a few blocks. And then I got pulled over or got stopped by the military and searched because I look American. So I've seen that, but you would wonder if that's racist. Is that racism, or is that nationalism, or is that maybe not? Maybe it's just because they're not really. Maybe I had the power because I'm from America. I don't know.
Yes, Nathan, you were all powerful. You were a missionary, so you automatically had the power there. For me, racism is it's wow. Okay, let me see if I can put these thoughts in order. For me, racism is not about a majority or a minority. Mm-hmm. It is thinking someone is less than or a different in a bad way because of some certain characteristic, okay?
Don't you think that applies to the idea of white privilege? That if you have, you know, because you're white, you are inherently privileged.
Well, I do think that there is some privilege being associated with us, with being white. There is some privilege.
But let's take a look at Will Smith's son. That's definitely privilege that he's able to be an actor and do all the things because he's shit.
Yeah.
Okay, he's garbage.
He was great in Karate Kid.
He was great in Karate Kid. Everything else is horrible.
Brian didn't think this would be talking about Friday.
I did not know it would go here.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm just saying. Right.
There's like, also privilege associated with being friend in a certain members of a family, right? There's privilege associated with having wealth. Mm-hmm. There's privilege in, when I say privilege, I mean you have you have things a little bit easier, you know.
But the point is that this is censorship. Like if you express a different point of view, you're immediately shut down and you're labeled as whatever ist or obic, you know, fill in the blank, name calling, because you expressed a different point of view. So that's censorship. And the worst censorship in my mind is self-censorship, because people are so afraid of being attacked or losing some status or whatever that they silence themselves. They self-censor so that they don't speak out because of fear of retribution.
So at work, we have this meeting every single week of they present on different things they've worked on as like, here's new products that are coming out and here's this and that. And they have different presenters that come on. And they had one come on. She was the, like,
the pronouns.
Was the pronoun that was put into their title on there. No one else had that. No one else had any sort of title, like saying, hey, I want to be seen as this. That was their thing. The person had, like, these pink headphones, and it was a man, you know, I'm quoting right here, a man. The person was a horrible presenter. It was like just the way they presented their stuff was not put together. It wasn't very good. And at the end of it, the person was like, that's so brave. You did so good. Thank you so much. You know, I just went on and on about this person. Whereas the other people that did a fantastic job a better job, we'll say that. It was just a thanks. But it wasn't this overabundant saying, okay, you're so brave. Effusive
outpouring of praise.
My biggest problem with it wasn't that this person wanted to be identified as that. It's that we're at work. And the meeting wasn't about that. And no one else cared. It didn't matter. It distracted from actually what they were trying to present. It actually distracted. My problem is that everyone's going out of the way not to treat them like a person, but to treat them more special.
Yeah. So there, you may have heard about this, and we haven't gotten to the whole issue of trans sports. Okay.
We're not going to get into that.
Gender
one.
People in sports. Well, I just wanted to give this example. So there was this is a trans woman. So used to be a man and transitioned to be a woman who was competing in swimming, by the name of now calling themselves Leah Thomas. And they're like 6'4", 6'2", you know? And so you see this person who is identifying as a woman next to the women that they're competing against. And it's like, wow, okay, that's obviously, you know, not the same. Anyway, this person competed in this one race with this girl named Riley Gaines. And she's gone on to speak about this and everything, but they had raced and they actually tied, which never happens in swimming, like to the fraction of a second, you know? Like it was, you know, and in other races, he was like 2 seconds ahead of other swimmers, like she, okay? Was ahead of other swimmers. They were taken back behind, you know, before they gave the medals, and the representative of the NCAA or whatever it is said, so we're gonna give this award to Leah Thomas, to the trans woman.
Well, for what reason?
They couldn't give a reason. They said basically that came down to, because we've been advised that this is what we need to do.
Yeah, well that's
when
that's
in doubt all,
that's definitely wrong.
Then you give it to the marginalized or the, you know, disadvantaged, so to speak, student.
That's, do you think, not though? Advantage. This is not to do with that specifically, but, and I'm just throwing this out there. I haven't thought this all the way through yet, but I've heard this, that it's kind of like when we're talking about diversity, they try to swing the door, because the door is going to swing back in the center, and so you swing it extra far towards whatever goal. And then hopefully when it centers, it is a little bit further is sure. Going on right now. And so let's say that in the 1970s, being a gay person was more difficult than it is now.
Absolutely.
It may not be a lifestyle or a philosophy that everyone agrees with, but you really push hard, and again, a lot of people pushed against this, that it's, this is not a choice that people are making, this is just their reality, they're born this way, and all this stuff, and all this effusion of understanding and inclusion. And then as the door swings back, so we're swinging it to under, to let even more people like that and their philosophy and understanding and situation, and then when it swings back, that we're a little bit further than we were at the beginning. And that we, oh, then we are going to allow marriage, and we're going to not make fun of them, and we'll have a TV show and not hate it because there's a gay person in it. And you think that, is there any truth to that, you think, guys think? Like, is there, we're help, doing that helps us as a society advance faster than we normally would.
I think there's some truth to it.
I think that, that obviously there have been great strides of equity and equality and, that have been made, and but the whole nature of this ideology, like I, you know, coming back to that, some, you know, that notion I said at the beginning, that, but it's that they're claiming that it's, you know, worse now than ever before.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
That there, but there are, I'm telling you, there are those in this ideology who really believe that, who really affirm, you know, who really believe that it is worse now.
They didn't grow up in the
60s. Than ever in our history, or that the systemic issues that have that existed in the 60s are still in place today, and that these underlying fabric of every institution in our society is racist, is sexist, is homophobic, etc. Okay. Okay, I wanted to talk about a couple other things. Remember, the whole idea is like, okay, what are the cult-like things about this, right?
Mm-hmm. So, you're going to have to wrap this up quick, Brian.
So one is affirming, okay, being an ally. You guys have probably heard this before. It's about love bombing, you know? And in fact, in indoctrination, there's a great deal of manipulation of emotions and compassion and fairness and justice. Often what happens is there's a renunciation of family and friends who don't agree with the ideology. So if, and that is very, very cult-like. The last thing I want to talk about is establishing utopia. So this is kind of this idea that if we do this, if we have enough justice, enough social justice, or enough of these ideals, that we'll actually achieve a utopia on Earth, that we will achieve true social justice or true critical or true racial justice or, you know, equity. And so if you are fighting for that, then you're on the side of the good guys. And if you are speaking out against it in any way, then you are by default evil because you're not seeking that utopia. There's also that we talked about, I said I was going to mention George Washington. So there is this vilification of history.
Yeah.
Where you are viewing the past through the lens of the current, your current ideology, which you believe is just unclouded, and you know, so founding fathers like Thomas Jefferson and George Washington are judged not on their exemplary deeds and what they accomplished in their lives, but because they owned slaves. And even Abraham Lincoln's statue has been canceled, has been overturned, even though he was a president that, you know, led the emancipation of the slaves. But he reportedly harbored views of African Americans that do not live up to the current standards of the woke art view, you know. Mm-hmm. But then there's this tendency to ignore the history of Marxist ideology that led to just some of the worst atrocities of the 20th century. You know, with Mao Zedong in China, with Stalin in Russia, Pol Pot in Cambodia. I mean, tens of millions of people died a lot from famine because of policies, but a lot from just execution, killing. Mm-hmm. So really quick, I just wanted to kind of, you know, go back to those ideas, you know, questioning, doubt, and dissent are discouraged. The group is elitist, claiming a special exalted status for itself and its members. The group has a polarized us versus them mentality, which may cause conflict with a wider society. The group teaches or implies that its supposedly exalted ends justify whatever means it deems necessary. And compartmentalizing information, discouraging individualism, encouraging groupthink, suppressing critical thinking, stark black and white thinking, us versus them mentality, and guilt and or fear-based indoctrination. I have one more clip.
You and all African Americans, please hear this from my heart. I apologize. Please forgive us.
I will love my black neighbors the same as my white ones. And do everything in my power to educate my community.
Do you think that's wrong?
Well, look at this.
We're
look
not
at the look
it's
at what
wrong.
They're doing.
We're saying, is this a cult?
Is this cult?
Oh, is it a cult? Yeah. I'm like, this is all stuff I probably agree with.
No, I mean,
but you see how they're all raising their hands.
I'm
they're
not
all
going
chanting
to apologize
in unison
for being white, though.
I'm not going to apologize
for what I have because I sure as hell have worked for it. It hasn't been easy.
I worked hard for this white skin.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the white skin. I'm talking about other stuff. I've worked hard for my house. I've worked hard for all my stuff. It hasn't been just handed to me. Maybe there's some privilege, but I've worked my ass off. In places that there were other people of color that worked there as well, and gay and whatever, and they've succeeded as well.
But most of them worked their asses off too, right?
Yeah, most of them did. The ones that worked harder, yes. The ones that didn't, not as much.
Hmm.
But I do want to know this one thing. I want to be referred to as she, they, she. Because I never talk to someone in their pronoun. I never will say, Brian, she, they, go to the store and get me will she they go to the store and get me a glass of soda or a soda. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's them telling you to refer to them behind their backs as something.
See, I would actually say that is a kind of renaming. And that was one of the points. I don't know if you remember that.
But you would want to be addressed, like let's say you identified as female. And no one knew you that way.
Nathan identifies Martian.
Okay. And so let's say you did.
And I need everyone to call me Mr. Mars.
Well, okay. But I mean, if you had a deep-seated belief, like, okay, this is how I was really should have, like, you don't want to be a dick. You want to respect people.
And
if they really feel something like that. And I mean, they shouldn't be mad if you accidentally misgender them. But I could see it like, hey, I thought I told you a bunch of times. I'd rather you say her or she. And you'd be like, oh, that's, of course I can afford you that.
I'll try. I can say I can try. It's going to take me years
totally.
To get it.
And that's, they should be understanding.
Now how many years it took me to call Christian instead of Einar? Years.
Yeah.
For like 3 years, it was so difficult for me to change his name.
Yeah.
Because I grew up with him as that. I looked at him and that, you're Einar. You're not Christian.
My feeling as of right now is that if someone who is male identifies as a female, then they should have a sex change. If you identify as a female, if that's what I want to be, then why aren't you doing something about it?
Well, that's just like...
You know, or the opposite of male. You know, if you're... a female and you identify as a male, you want to be a male, one,
I do think there's respect. I mean, it's a, you know, for many it's just a question of respect and of kindness and compassion, and I think that's all valid. That's definitely valid. But to compel,
yeah, I agree with that.
Force it, say like with legislation in Canada, to force that you have to, or you could be subject to criminal charges.
You know, like Jordan Peterson,
mm-hmm.
he had that where he was, I mean, he's kind of been canceled there because he said, I'm not going to refer to you the way, I'll be polite. And if you, but you're not going to make me wrong and not going to put me in jail for this, or you can do that, but I will go to jail. And I understand that feeling too. Like he doesn't want to be forced to do something.
And he's explained this as he sees it as, okay, well I could cave into this, but I see there that is a, this is a a slippery slope, or that there's a much greater danger down the road of caving into this. And so it wasn't like, I don't believe it was that he was just saying, no, I don't want to be compassionate or kind. I just see this as an issue of free speech.
Yes, he doesn't want to be compelled to do it. Yeah, I agree with that.
But just looking at the characteristics that I started with, do you think this is a cult?
I think it's just, I'll go first, but I think some of it is a cult. I think if you take it to its normal, what we would think, is a normal limit. Like, you know, we respect people and everyone wants to be treated fairly. But when we say you're wrong for being white, or you're a race, or you're a sexist for being male, that's, I think, when you automatically give someone that, put that on them, I think that's becomes culty and wrong. Yeah.
Let's say it this way. It's not a cult. You're not in a cult if you believe this stuff. Clear up until when you're talking about someone and you correct them so that they use the correct they, them, that's when it's a cult. You officially have joined a cult.
I think in its inner circle, it is a cult. Definitely. Yeah. Without a doubt. I really have a hard time with several things. Cultural appropriation. I really have a hard time of it. Anyone who knows history should be just screaming at that whole idea. It's so asinine. If you know your history, if you know how the world works, how cultures work, that the whole idea is so mind-numbing, stupid. It still makes me mad. Just, I can't believe people think that sort of stuff.
I didn't get that from you.
It really pisses me off. Everything I've read historically wise, it's like the whole idea is so, yeah.
And so, just an explanation for those. So cultural appropriation, the idea is that you can't adopt anything from another culture because you are not of that culture. Like, if you were a white person, you should not be making tacos and burritos.
Yeah, I know this family who named all of their kids very Finnish, Icelandic names, and they're more English than they are Finnish. But, I mean, they just went all in on the Finnish names.
Finnish names, like what? Like, what, can you give me an example?
Icelandic.
Gunnar.
You know, yeah, and I saw this little video where this guy is like, he's going to be interviewing people on the street, you know, like woke people, and he's got a sombrero, you know, like big sombrero. He's like, so is there a problem? They're like, this is not appropriate. This is totally not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to like a Mexican village or, you know, whatever. And they're just like, I love it. You know, like, oh, it's so fun. You know, they're just loving it, you know, and yet it's reprehensible in the eyes of the woke community. Yeah.
At its core, I do well, except for this thing. I want to say that the difference is that they're really pushing hard to turn it into a religion. In other words, it's not a cult, but that's a mainstream view. And so that would be my thing. It's more of a religion.
So
than
you
a cult.
You think that because it's so widespread, it is no longer a cult.
No longer really consider. I don't know if it's really a cult. It's a religion, and they're pushing it like a religion, you know. So
a secular religion.
As in, we send out our missionaries. When I say we, I use that loosely, but you know, churches send out their missionaries, and push their belief system, and that's what the woke movement is doing. It's pushing it hard, I think they're more of a religion in that sense than a cult. So
I know we have a couple young listeners out there, a couple that are in high school,
and we've lost them all,
and we probably lost you. I'm so sorry.
Hopefully, just because I talk too long,
maybe we need to do some more love bombing.
No, it's just you know, it's hard ones. I find this is very prevalent against younger people, 20s and younger.
You mean it's very prevalent in their circles, that they are more prone to thinking
this way. Mm-hmm. And those that I've talked to a few, and they even have told me, they're just like, well, my parents are old, and they just don't understand. They just don't understand this movement. They don't understand Black Lives Matter and why it matters. And every time I hear that, I'm like, I think maybe you need to give your parents a little more credence in what they've seen and what they've gone through.
Yeah.
Now that they don't care about black people, they absolutely do.
Well, I don't know if you know this about when that was happening, but like the Black Lives Matter, movement. And, again, that's another one of those phrases where it's like, well, duh, of course Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
But if you were to say all lives matter, like that
is racist, though.
That is one of the worst things you could say.
Is that racist?
That all lives matter is racist? Yeah,
it's a dog whistle.
What do you mean?
A dog whistle is when you say something and you mean something else. When you say something and only a certain people are supposed to understand, like when you say they, them, that does mean, when you put that in your email tag, that means that you are on your left wing.
So which is the dog whistle? Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter?
Both of them.
Okay.
Both of them are to that group. When you say All Lives Matter, you're being like, oh no. White lives matter, black lives matter, all lives matter. That's what it sounds like, but it's kind of like, it's kind of like if like we all grew up Mormon, and if we're in, where do they do the Governor Boggs?
Missouri.
Okay, so we're after Missouri, and they still have that on the books. Let's just say they still have that.
The extermination order
on the books from Governor Boggs, and we wanted it taken off, and we'd say, "Well, Mormon lives matter," and they'd be like, "No, all lives matter." I'm like, yeah, they do. But my point is, Mormon lives matter, so it means something to that group. Sure. Where it's like, no, you need to say, it's not an extermination order again. You need to rescind that specifically. Not so all lives do matter, but Mormon lives matter for this. So I think that's the kind of, they meant something.
Sure.
It doesn't mean
they need to say what they mean, because if in that case, it's not about Mormon Lives Matter. It's about the extermination of anyone.
Yeah. And so they'd say, have a diatribe of what you believe that how things should be fair. You could say Black Lives Matter. Like, mm-hmm. We're being arrested more than other groups. So we're being treated a little bit differently than other groups, and so Black Lives Matter is what they're saying.
That's good.
I think.
But it becomes, with that kind of a statement, it becomes something where you starts to become a soundbite where you use it on everything. Mm-hmm. Where Black Lives Matter. Of course they do. I understand that. It's
much more effective to say talk about discrimination.
Totally.
Yeah. Instead of Black Lives Matter. And besides, they are some of the philosophies are a little bit out there. I mean, they.
What do you mean? Philosophies of who?
Black Lives Matter.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of the group, of the actual organization. Yeah, the
organization. But I completely agree with the idea of Black Lives Matter. Discrimination is wrong, but. Mm-hmm. But like saying that you're racist if you say Pledge of Allegiance and stuff like that.
But you can see if someone said White Lives Matter and they're like, no, White Lives Matter, and I put a bumper sticker and they're so insistent that White Lives Matter, they'd be like, are you?
I would be questioning that too.
I would be
white person. I'd be like, what are you talking about?
Why are we saying white?
Yeah, lives and I think that's their point.
And that's
the dog whistle. It's like you're saying to white supremacists. Even though you're not, you're like, White Lives Matter, sure they do. But
yeah,
it's like white supremacists know, hey, they're on my side.
So I think you all know what I think, but...
We already said it was a cult.
But you already said it wasn't.
I said it was.
Oh, you said it was.
And I said I think it's more of a religion.
Oh, okay.
So.
And I say it's a cult that you belong to a cult once you start saying, correcting people for improperly saying the right title. That's what it is. Just, let them figure
when
it out.
When you're censoring, when you're canceling.
When you censor and start canceling, that's when.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The good, the bad, and the culty. Now we discuss what this week's cult did right and where they got it all wrong.
The good, the bad, and the culty. The good. What's good about this?
Well, they're trying not to be, they're trying to be fair to people. At least some of them are. It's like, we want everyone to be treated.
Social justice is a good thing.
It is a good thing. It is. Social justice is a good thing. And people should not be discriminated against according to...
And the value of human beings...
Beliefs and...
Is a good thing.
Race and other things, you know. And the gamut, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's... There's... That's a...
Marxist ideology?
Is that good? I don't know. I've heard some people still spout that it's good.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, there are many people that...
As far as ideology is concerned, I can see why people can jump over so many people. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm. I think it's a good ideology, maybe not the best practice.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. When it comes to practice, it's really hard to...
Well, I don't know. Mao Zedong, I mean, I thought he did a pretty good job with it, right?
Is that how you say his name?
Mao Zedong.
Mao Zedong.
Yeah. He was...
Or you put a little... more mouths and less dong.
Just probably the highest death toll of any... leader.
Yeah. Just horrific.
Tens
horrific,
of millions.
Horrific. Yeah. And he couldn't, because, and this is the thing, is it goes away from communism. It's no longer, that the communist idea is not there. It is.
Mm. It's now Mao's communist.
Yes.
No, it's nationalistic, it's almost.
Yeah. And it, but the problem is that is the way communism goes, because I consider it to be kind of an unnatural social event. And so you have to...
Imposed.
And so you really have to push hard, and someone will get in charge and they stay in charge. And human lives don't matter because you're looking for the greater good. And I put that in quotes. Mm-hmm. And the greater good is caused more pain and suffering in the world, except for maybe might makes right. That would be a little bit more... But those are the two philosophies throughout history that have killed more people than anyone else.
It wasn't a problem until it became a religion.
Right?
Like, it's communism. What was it? Wasn't a problem until it became a religion.
So, the bad. Black Lives Matter.
It's the cancel culture, taking history and reusing and working it to your image.
Yep.
It's anything. Pretty much anything is bad in its success.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's just so many excesses. I mean, I could talk the for reversal, a while. The things I've learned. It's just crazy. But. I just want to share this. So there was these three guys, and they were really intelligent people, and professors, or they all had doctorates, and they decided they were going to look into all the doctoral papers, all the research literature of all these like gender studies and queer studies and critical race theory studies, and they actually were told like they couldn't criticize because they didn't have the degree, you know. Like they were criticized, like, well, what? I don't think this is right. And like, well, you can't criticize because you're not part of the discipline, kind of thing. And so they wrote hoax papers and got many of them published. Okay. But one of the craziest examples they said is that one of them was about separating kids into these groups, you know, and teaching them that they are bigoted and racist and all this for their birth, you know, for what their skin color and everything. And then that's part of the paper, they said, yeah, but do it with compassion. It's another one of those buzzwords. But the reviewers actually wrote back and said, this is great, but take out the compassion part. Because you might help them to, you know, think that they're actually okay. I don't remember the exact phrase. Mm-hmm. It was like, but the guy's like, I could not believe they said that.
Uh-huh.
Because he said, this is really the seed of genocide.
Hmm.
So I thought, whoa, that's pretty intense.
How about the culty? What can we take from this? And
I totally have something.
All right, let's hear it.
We are going to come out with a new pronoun for the nice cult. Okay. So everyone who is a member of the Nice Cult, you can then now use, let's see.
Fimfer.
Fimfer? How about
Gunger?
It has to be something about Ronaldo, so.
So, Ronaldite. No, we already have the Ronaldite. How about Nice is your
pronoun.
Nice.
Oh.
How would you use that in a sentence?
Or firm. I think firm
to go over to the store.
But in your email, you give your name and you just put in parentheses, nice.
Refer to me as nice.
Refer to me as nice.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
That is. Yeah. I love this.
I finally did one that you guys actually liked. Are we all? Is there anything else you want to try?
You didn't mention. Let's all get a tattoo. And so I like
everyone who's in the Nice Cult should get a Nice Cult tattoo. If you want the graphic, we'll send it to you.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure having you, Brian. And we'd like to encourage anyone else who has something they want to talk about, a cult or something that they think is a cult, to come on over. And so we can make fun of you and deride you too. the only problem with this is that it wasn't funny enough, Brian.
It wasn't a very funny cult.
Yeah, it's okay though. Not all of ours are fun.
Well, I noticed there was a lot of seriousness going on.
We hope you had fun with us as we explored this week's cult. Join our adventure next week as we continue to build our cult one belief at a time. Until then, if you're going to join a cult,
join the Nice Cult!